Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Hello, Judy, and hello, listeners. Well, what is our topic for today?
Okay, today's topic is one that should be of particular interest to many people. It is called sex, good sex, and sacred sex.
Wow, what a sexy topic, I guess,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
Indeed, yes. And, you know, before we get into talking about the specifics, I just want to say some stuff that we generally tell people at the beginning of our podcast, just to let you know. We would like you to comment and rate us on wherever you get your podcasts and the kind of things that people do. Share our posts on social media. Let people know about this. Tell your friends about it. We've been having really nice growth in our listenership, and we'd like to see that continue. And also, I want to mention that this podcast is based on a book that came out earlier this year that I wrote called Reigniting the Spark: Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. And what we've been doing in this podcast is mostly going through the topics that are covered in that book. The 7 words of couples therapy in 7 words are:
be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
And the book is organized along that, and that's what we've been talking about in our various podcasts. And we've also had really fascinating interviews that we've done with folks, and we have some of those that will be coming up in future episodes as well. But for today, as Judy said, our topic is sex, good sex, and sacred sex.
So tell me, Bruce, what counts as plain old sex?
Yeah, and you know, I want to comment on that term plain old sex, because I just had fun with it. Those of you out there listening who have any experience or knowledge about telecommunications, of all things, will probably remember or recognize the acronym POTS, P-O-T-S, which stood for, or I guess still stands for, plain old telephone service. I, you know, I've been away from that for 20 years. I don't know if they still use that term. I don't think it applies so much to telecommunications anymore, does it? Everybody has cell phones. But POTS, what they meant is, you know what telephone service is, and that's what we're talking about. Well, plain old sex, you know what sex is, that's what we're talking about. Now, that's a funny way of describing it, because, of course, if I said, gee, what do you mean by sex, to 20 different people, I'd probably get 30 different responses. So really, this is kind of similar to what I did in the book with infidelity. It's not up to me to define it. It's up to you to define it, but you know what you mean by sex. It could be, I really mean it to be a very expansive definition. It could be masturbation, you know, sex for one, you know, where you're doing whatever you're doing by yourself. It could be any sort of sexual interaction with someone else, or I suppose multiple people. If you call it sex, that's what I'm talking about. So I'm not trying to get into any sort of legalistic or, you know, Clintonian definition of whether or not you had sex with that woman. I'm just talking in general, you know what sex is about. It usually involves the genitals, sort of, but it doesn't have to even. Mm-hmm. So that's what we mean by plain old sex.
Ah, so how do you get from that plain old sex to good sex?
And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what makes it good?
Exactly. Well, you know what? I want to stay for a moment, I am answering your question, because to understand what makes it good, we really have to understand a little more about plain old sex.
Okay.
Actually. I set this concept up as sort of a course in sex. Do you know what I mean? It starts off, you start off at the plain old sex level, and then you can graduate to good sex. And then from there, you can graduate to sacred sex. I realize that's kind of a silly oversimplification, but it's a useful way of thinking about it. And just to be even okay with plain old sex, there's lots of people that I deal with. And look, I wish I could say this was rare, but it's not. Lots of people I deal with who've had a history of sexual abuse or sexual trauma of one kind or another.
Yeah.
And that means that they may have serious difficulties even with plain old sex because it can be a trigger for some kind of PTSD response.
Sure.
You know, it can be something that can generate panic or a huge anxiety spike.
Very much so.
Yeah. So healing in that way is, of course, what one needs to do if that's what's happening. And I want to inject a note of hope there, because if you are dealing with the after effects of some kind of sexual trauma, there is good treatment available. There are better and better treatments available. Since I've been in private practice for the last somewhat over 25 years, I've seen lots of new things come along and some very good research. So there's hope. If you are somebody who is still dealing with the effects of sexual trauma, seek out treatment from a therapist who is familiar with some of these treatments that are often very effective. I'll mention EMDR is one that for many people is very effective. There are lots of different treatments that involve not merely just talking about it, but doing some things that actually have the effect of healing the trauma so that you don't get the panic response. And that's just in dealing with plain old sex.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what lets you then explore your own sexuality. You know, you can figure out what you like and what you don't like when you're not panicking. And that's a really important set of skills, even if you're just plain old sex.
Mm-hmm.
So then, now let me get to the specifics of your question. Okay, how do you get to good sex?
Well, right.
Who am I to say what good sex is, you know?
Well, apparently you are the person because it's in your book, so.
I do seem to be stepping in with a definition, but again, I recognize it's, of course, in the experience, in the eye of the beholder. You know, it's like everybody gets to decide what they mean by good sex. But what I mean specifically, the distinction I make based on the concepts of my book is plain old sex becomes good sex when it's intimate. And by intimate, I don't mean necessarily, you know, tender and whatever your associations are with the term intimate. What I mean is that you actually show up physically and emotionally with your body and with your spirit and with your consciousness, and your partner does the same if there's a partner involved. So,
let's take this from the point of view that there is a partner involved with this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So, good sex. You know, that does raise the question: is it possible for one of a partner? Let's just to further define this. Let's assume we're talking about exactly two, n equals two. In other words, we're not talking about, you know, threesomes or anything like that.
Right. For the purposes of this interview, we're dealing with two people.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I won't comment for this. I might as well say, as while we're on the subject of two people, I mentioned this in my book. The overwhelming number of couples, the vast majority of the couples that I work with are heterosexual, two cisgendered people of opposite sexes. I have worked quite a bit with lesbian couples, gay couples, couples where one or both are trans or in some sort of non-binary way. So I have worked with such folks. But I don't like to make assumptions that my own experience, which is heterosexual, we are both, you know, cisgendered heterosexuals. I don't want to make grandiose assumptions about saying, oh, this works for everybody. So I do want to make sure to say that.
No, but I just meant in terms of this, we're dealing with two people.
We are dealing with two people. And I do want to situate this, you know, recognize that the assumptions I tend to make without realizing it tend to be what they call heteronormative. You know what I mean? I'm heterosexual. I tend to think in those terms. And I do want to acknowledge that for the benefit of people who are not heterosexual, who are listening and are saying, hey, don't go speaking for us when you don't know what you're talking about. So yes, indeed, we are talking about two people. And it does raise the question, is it possible for one of the people to have experienced good sex and the other person saying, you know, plain old sex? And I think, oddly enough, the answer to that is yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm implying it isn't necessarily the case that both parties experience as good for it to be good. I don't think it's likely that one person can say, wow, that was, you know, experience good sex and the other person experience it as horrible, because what I'm saying about what makes sex good sex is when you're really present and really aware. And, you know, if one party is really aware, they're going to be aware of the fact that the other party isn't in the same place, or at least they're going to wonder about it, I think. But the point is, good sex is when you really show up, you're really present. And that's not as simple, I think, as it might sound. It's not just that you have a wonderful time and have a lovely orgasm or whatever it is that you have. It's that you're fully present, and that can actually be sometimes anxiety producing. It can be a little scary. And relationally speaking, what that implies is when you're having good sex, you are very likely to be very open to communicating with your partner, saying what you like, saying what you don't like, letting your partner observe you being who you are and observing who your partner is. And that can be scary for a lot of folks. I talk to lots of couples where, you know, they'll say, oh, we have our sex life is fine. But when we actually start talking about it, come to find out, they are not telling each other a lot of things that sometimes raises some problems. And they're just not dealing with it because they're afraid to. They're, you know, afraid in the sense of it's scary for somebody to tell somebody, you know, I really don't like how you're doing that. I wish we could try this, but I'm afraid to ask you.
Yeah, because you think that your partner might reject you or say, you know, just find that that's out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's that, that they may reject you. And it even goes to something like to celebrate something that you're just feeling deeply is a bit of a risk with someone you care about because they may find it, you know, they just may not be there with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that can feel like a kind of rejection.
So, yeah, but I think what I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're saying like good sex, you know, both partners have to feel that level of comfort that they can be honest enough with each other to be able to take that rejection. If, let's say, one partner suggests something and the other one says, well, you know, I really don't want to do that because for whatever reason, I just don't want to do that. And mm-hmm. the other person not to feel rejected by it.
Well, absolutely. That is what it takes. And you said, you know, they have to feel comfortable enough to do that. And I'm translating that into my terms. They have to tolerate the anxiety of doing that because mm-hmm. it isn't always comfortable.
Right.
But they have to be able to trust that they can take that risk. And you know, well, you know what? I was about to comment on a sort of a general principle, but I'm going to hold that for a little bit until we get to our listener question, because our listener question is going to illustrate some of those very, very points.
So now that we are talking about good sex, how do we get from good sex to sacred sex?
Yes, indeed. And of course, I suppose to explain that concept, we have to explain what sacred means.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, people can say, wow, that sex was so good. It was this, you know, spiritual experience. And that could be part of it, just that sense.
Oh, so it's not putting Vestal Virgins on the altar?
It is not. Didn't even think of that possibility. No, that's not what I had in mind. So thank you for clearing that up.
Okay, just wanted to know.
Yeah, lest any of our listeners were thinking, oh, you're talking about some kind of, you know.
A temple ritual.
A temple ritual involving, you know, sexual activities or something like that.
That's not what you mean.
That's not what I mean. Okay. Yep, thanks for clearing that one up. Hadn't even thought of that. Yeah, no, what it really is about what the notion of sacred is. The term sacred. And of course, I go to the Hebrew word kadosh, you know, kedusha, holiness. It has to do with something set apart from the ordinary. That's really what the root of that concept is. I think when I was writing the book, I'm pretty sure I looked up sacred and the etymology of that English word sacred and where it comes from in probably Latin, I guess. And I think it has that same connotation. It's something that is set apart from the ordinary. So what I one of my favorite things I like to point out, I'm sure I put this in the book, why talk about sacred with respect to sex? I mean, you could, why not, you know, sacred ditch digging or sacred dishwashing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about that is there are people in various traditions that would point out you absolutely can do sacred ditch digging and sacred dishwashing. In other words, you can elevate any sort of daily humdrum activity to the sacred depending on the spirit that you approach it with. So why do I say that sex is very much amenable to the sacred? Well, because sex itself is so powerful. The feelings of sex, you know, and I say this in the book, think back, you know, however old you are, if you've experienced orgasm, which I realize not everybody has, but if you have experienced it, think back to the first time you experienced it. For a lot of people, the stories I hear, it was terrifying. For some people, it was like really good. For some people, it was just mysterious. It's like, why is this happening? What is going on here? It's a very powerful event. And one of the things that makes it so powerful is it feels like it's not completely in your control. It feels like you're riding some wave that is much bigger than you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a feature of sex that makes it very amenable to experiencing it as sacred. Because what sacredness does is it connects you with something much bigger. Now, in religious terms, you know, people in Western religions, in you know, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, religions, in other words, that talk about God as God, as a personal God, it then sacredness is about somehow connecting yourself to God, having that experience of having a very close relationship with God. With traditions that don't speak in deistic terms, you know, in terms of a particular one God,
mm-hmm.
it's still about connecting yourself to forces in the universe much greater than just an individual self. And that's the idea of sacred sex. When you and what I claim is, in order to have sacred sex, you've got to be at that level where you are fully present. You have to be able to be intimate with yourself and your partner and the world in general, which is what, of course, what I meant by good sex.
And to tolerate the anxiety.
Precisely, to tolerate that anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So to get to that place of sacred sex, at least I suppose I'd say to get there with some degree of intention, I think you need to be pretty practiced at good sex. Now, having said that, I'm sure I've certainly heard plenty of stories of people's experiences of sacredness in a sexual context without their having thought much about it, or, you know, without necessarily being good at talking to their partner or any of the kind of things that I say go along with good sex. But if you want sacred, if you sort of aspire to sacredness, then I think what you need to practice is not merely being good at good sex, which is to say being open and being willing to talk to your partner and being willing to experience what you experience and you know, wonder about what you wonder about and be willing to risk acting on it with your partner if you can. It's not only that. It's also being willing and able to experience the sacred in all aspects of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And sacredness, well, you know, when we talked in our previous podcast about why get married, and we'll be doing that again. We'll have another, at least one more crack at that, I'm sure, at that topic about why get married. Getting married is a lot about raising your relationship to be part of something much bigger. That's the difference between merely, as if it was a small thing, merely being committed and loving and, you know, living with somebody and intending to do so for the rest of your life versus marriage itself. It raises it to another level that involves not just you. It's not just the couple. It's the community. It's God. It's the whole universe. And sacred sex does that for the domain of sex. It says this isn't just about us. Now, I'm not saying you're doing it in public. You know, that's not what I mean. But I'm saying it's an expression of something. It's participating in something that is much bigger than just the two of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also having that level of communication and intimacy and trust.
Well, that's, I think, basically a prerequisite for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and in that sense, it's yet another example of what we've talked about, you know, in other parts of the book, certainly, that notion that in order to be intimate, that, you know, there's stability and there's intimacy. And what intimacy requires is that you tolerate the anxiety so that you can communicate about whatever you feel the need to communicate in a compassionate way, in a respectful way, but nevertheless, in a courageous way. It's tolerating anxiety that makes intimacy in general possible. And that, of course, applies to good sex and sacred sex as well.
Right. So what I'm hearing from this is that, you know, you could have a good, satisfying sex life, you know, with your partner, but not necessarily have that sacred sex where you're having that level of intimacy.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, intimate, you know, I'm
trying to separate the physical act from the physical emotional part. Yes.
Yes, indeed.
And I think that's what the sacredness comes in. It's not just having, you know, a good sex life and a good physical sex life, but also having the psychological intimacy that might be missing from partners that, you know, have a really great sex life, but don't necessarily communicate with each other on other issues.
See, the distinction you're making, and I don't mean to be sort of precious about my terminology, he says, being precious about his terminology, but the distinction you're making is exactly the one I would make between plain old sex and good sex.
Mm.
In other words, that even good sex requires exactly that kind of psychological intimacy that you're describing. It's like, no, you got to be willing to hear yourself and hear your partner, do you know, and want that. So that when I'm putting that at good sex, uh-huh. you know, as prerequisite to sacred sex.
Oh, okay.
So it's certainly part of this of sacred sex, but I would go back, no, that's the distinction between plain old and good, because lots of couples will say, and I hear this in my practice quite a bit, lots of couples will say, oh, we have sex frequently, we always enjoy it, you know, it doesn't seem to be a problem. Except that what I'm, you know, why are they talking to me, right? I've often pointed out to people, you know, it's funny. Nobody ever makes an appointment with me just to tell me how well things are going. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't get to hear that. So often what happens when people are saying that is then they're also saying, yeah, but we're always arguing with each other, or we're, you know, we're always having these difficulties. And not always, but often it turns out when you circle back around to their sex life, come to find out that they just aren't telling each other some stuff. Mm-hmm. So yes, they're enjoying it. They sort of settled into a routine that is pleasurable. And I don't mean to knock that. I mean, that's, for many couples, it's way better than nothing. Do you know what I mean?
I think we're saying the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's, my quibbling is about the, I'm saying, yeah, that's what good sex is about.
Uh-huh.
And so to get from good to sacred is adding something further to
right.
it. It's not just about the two of you, even. It's not just about, mm-hmm. you know, your psychological, your ability to be psychologically intimate. That's what good sex is about.
Mm-hmm.
Sacredness, it's raising it to another level. It isn't even about the two of you anymore.
Oh.
Do you see what I mean? That's what I'm saying. It's this experience that says, it ain't just you. Mm-hmm. It's not just you, and it's not just your partner. It's not just the two of you. It's this sense that you're connected to something way bigger, you know, and this is where the folks who write about such things will use words like ineffable, which I think means you can't speak about it.
Mm.
You know, there aren't good words to describe it. That's what I mean by sacred sex. It's a connection to something that is, it's not merely the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I don't, as I say, I'm getting precious about the terminology. When you have that level of good sex that is deeply intimate, I think that's when it starts to feel sacred if you are open to the sacred in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suppose what I'm trying to say in this distinction is sacredness is worth looking into because it's a richer experience even than good sex is, which is a very rich experience. So that's, you know, that's the distinction I'm making.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I think this is a good place where we can take our listener question. So this week we have a question from Chloe, and she writes, my husband and I are both 30. We've been together for 6 years, married for 4, and have a 3-year-old daughter. We get along really well most of the time about most things. I love him, and I can tell he loves me. I'm writing because I'm starting to feel resentment about our sex life. I like sex with my husband, but sometimes I'm not in the mood when he wants it. And if I turn him down, he sometimes acts like our daughter when I say she can't have candy before dinner. He gets angry and yells or turns his back on me without a word. This doesn't happen all the time, but it's happened enough that I find myself giving in to him so I don't have to deal with his reaction. Most of the time our sex is great, but I'm starting to dread it if it's been a few days and I know he's wanting it. What can we do?
Indeed, what can they do?
Mm-hmm.
And you can see why perhaps earlier when I said, hey, let's come back to that question about how do you handle some of those differences?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is what this is all about. I like this question because it exemplifies one of my favorite little things to point out when I'm talking to people about sex, which is, you know, any time you have a couple that is any sort of long-term and you get to decide for yourself what long-term means, that if they have a sexual relationship, it is pretty much inevitable that the day will arrive, or the night will arrive, when one of the two is proposing sex one way or another, and the other one is not wanting to do it, right?
They're
not in the mood, you know, for whatever reason. That's just inevitable. It's bound to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love to point out is how a couple handles that, especially the first time, or, you know, the first few times that happens, how a couple handles that is an index of how they're doing. It's an indicator of how they're doing. And it's also a causal factor for how they're going to do. Now, what do I mean by that? If you handle that, if a couple handles that with grace, with, you know, if in this case, if Chloe's husband were the first time that happened, if he just said, cool. In other words, if he just said, you know, gee, let me just cuddle you if you want, or, you know, can mm-hmm. I get you a cup of tea? You know, right. In other words, if his senses...
In other words, he's not having a tantrum.
He's not, exactly, precisely. He's not being the daughter who's just been turned down for candy, right? Yeah, he's being a grown-up. And not just a grown-up, but a nice grown-up. Mm-hmm. You know, he's being nice right. about it. He's saying, you know, because if she's indicating she's not feeling great, then perhaps he turns to, can I get you a cup of tea? I always go to a cup of tea. I realize I don't even like tea that much. I do. You know that between us. Every once in a while, I like a cup of tea. When you get me a cup of tea, or that's a lovely thing to do. But that's my favorite, you know. It's mm-hmm. like, do something nice you yeah. know, that isn't demanding, you know, mm-hmm. that isn't asking for something. Or just, you know, if she wants to be left alone, leave her alone, but leave her alone with a smile on your face. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Do whatever, you know, just be nice. If he handles that nicely... And by the way, this is not restricted gender-wise this way. I would say this is more often the case, the way I hear it. I more often hear this sort of thing from women than men, but I have frequently heard it from men also that, you know, a woman is the one wanting it and the man is turning her down. In any case, if the husband in this case, if he didn't throw a tantrum, then she's going to be more confident about saying how she feels. And of course, she indicated in the question, it's not like she doesn't sound like somebody who has a history of sexual trauma. Mm-hmm. You know, she likes sex. She said so. She even said,
right. I
like sex with my husband. And she said, most of the time our sex is great. It's, you know, she doesn't have, there's nothing wrong with her. It doesn't sound like there's anything wrong with him either. But her resentment is about the fact that she can't just be who she is and have that be okay.
Right.
And that is a turnoff. That's
right.
A turnoff for,
if she's, you yeah. know, gonna like feel like she has to give in to him just to shut him up. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, closing down a whole level of intimacy there.
It is precisely. And here I will defer to you as the representative of women in the universe, because I'm not about to mansplain to you any more than my natural tendency as a man, because that's what we do, isn't it? But I hear from a lot of women.
But that's what I'm saying. You know, that's yeah. what I'm thinking. You hear from a lot of women, probably more than I hear from them, that's for sure.
I suppose that's true, just by the nature of our respective occupations.
Exactly.
But what I was going to note, and of course invite your comment, is that it's especially so for women vis-a-vis sex that, you know, this is the classic thing that various therapists say in various ways. You know, women need to feel intimate before you're interested in sex. Mm-hmm. Men use sex to feel intimate.
Yeah.
And so for men as a group, lots of exceptions, of course, but for men as a group, a man will want to have sex. And if she's interested too, then he will feel that sense of intimacy coming from him. Whereas a woman needs to already feel intimate and open to him and trusting of him before she has any interest in being sexual. Is that...
Mm-hmm.
Does that
sound that's pretty right? accurate.
Yeah.
I would say.
So, you know, not surprising then that Chloe is starting to feel some resentment about that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a bummer because otherwise she might be the one feeling like, ooh, you know, I'm feeling kind of frisky and, you know, be all about him, sex mm-hmm. with him. But she's being trained, not to get all behaviorist on everybody here, but she's being trained to have negative feelings about the prospect of having sex mm-hmm. with her husband. And that's, of course, that's a downward spiral
mm-hmm.
right there.
Yep.
So we still haven't addressed her question. What can we do?
Mm.
So what do you do? What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that they need to sit down and have a conversation about what she's feeling and find out why he's reacting the way he's reacting to it. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe she's, you know, tired.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel like having it. She had a rough day with the kid. Whatever is going on, they need to be able to communicate openly with each other. She needs to be able to say to him, sometimes I just don't feel like having sex. And it's not a rejection of you, honey. It's, you know, my mood for whatever reason tonight you know? So maybe we can plan on a night. Maybe we can, you know, have a date night sometime when I'm not so stressed. Mm-hmm. So, and he needs to be able to hear that from her and say to her, okay, well, if it's not working for you tonight, I will go in the other room for a little bit.
And which, you know, that particular point, I will go in the other room for a little bit, needs to be okay with her. Mm-hmm. And I've talked with lots of couples where it flat out isn't, where she thinks of that as cheating. If he goes and masturbates in the other room, she thinks of that as cheating. Mm. And that's also problematic. I'm going to guess, of course, we don't know. She didn't say in the letter, but I'm going to guess in terms of what you were just talking about, which makes eminent sense to me as well. She's probably tried that, you know, she's probably tried that approach of trying to be, you know, just explain herself to him. And from my experience with lots of couples, and I suppose I throw in my experience as a male because, you know, sometimes we're jerks in a particular male kind of way. I mean, we're all capable of being jerks in various ways, but this is a characteristic male way of being a jerk. He may not be open to hearing that because whether he knows it consciously or not, he feels entitled.
Mm, he feels like, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, you're my wife. You don't get to say no. You know, it is. I just saw this on some posting, and I actually did research for that in my book. I think it was 1993 was the year when marital rape became a crime in all 50 states. Hmm. In the 90s, in the early 90s.
Yeah, that's astonishing.
Yeah, it was still legal in some states in this country for a man to basically rape his wife.
Yeah.
You know, she couldn't say no because she was married.
Well, if he feels entitled, he's a bigger jerk than I'm giving him credit for.
Well, yeah. And this is where, you know, I hate to say it, but look, there's degrees. She doesn't say he rapes her.
No.
I mean, and I don't mean to make light of that.
Well, no, but if she feels like she's giving in to him just to get it over with and to shut him up, that's not a good sign.
No, it's not a good sign, but I do want to make the distinction. It's not rape.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's like she's not, you know, and look, I also don't want to completely dismiss the idea of, you know, mercy sex. Do you know what I mean? It's like I've heard this from couples. It's like sometimes she'll say, I'm not really in the mood, but I can get myself in the mood just to be nice because it makes him feel good and I want to make him feel good. That's not a problem. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The problem there might be, gee, bummer that you're not in the mood as much as you'd like to be. You know, let's talk about that. But the fact of her saying, you know, not my number one activity, but I can see why you're kind of,
but she's dreading it.
Yeah,
you know,
the problem here is
she's dreading it. And, you know, sometimes, you know, when from the readings that we've done and from our conversations with other therapists and, you know, with Batsheva, when we spoke with Batsheva Marcus, you know, about sex, people go through cycles too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes their cycles are not always in sync.
Which that's what I'm claiming is inevitable. You know, that it's bound to happen eventually. Mm-hmm. Well, since you mentioned about Batsheva Marcus, I do want to give a shout out to that episode, which was certainly one of my favorites, and I think yours too. It was a real fun episode when we interviewed Dr. Batsheva Marcus, who is a sex therapist. She's known as the Orthodox Sex Guru. That's episode 5. If you go to any of the places you get our podcast and scroll down, you might have to go to, you know, a page of older episodes because it's one of her earlier episodes. Check that one out. And while we're talking about Batsheva, I want to give a shout out to her forthcoming book. Forthcoming, so we haven't read it yet, but it promises, from her description, it promises to be a wonderful resource for couples. And I'm happy to give her a plug here. The name of the book is Sex Points, and it's a very practical guide to dealing with lots of these sorts of issues. And her perspective is as a sex therapist in a women's health center. So she works with women dealing with exactly what you're talking about, that their people go through various kinds of cycles and events in their life when maybe their desire, and she works with women primarily, so, you know, maybe her desire is not what it was and she's wondering why. And she pointed out to me in reviewing my book, actually, that sometimes, as I always stress the relational aspects of that, you know, and this letter is a good example of that. I'd say, this is a relational problem. You know, he needs to not be a jerk. But she points out sometimes it's not about him being a jerk. Sometimes she's having a hormonal issue, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's some things that actually can be addressed in individual therapy for her. And that's also important to know. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, clearly.
Getting back to our couple.
Exactly.
I think that they need to be able to have an honest talk with each other.
Yeah.
Is what it comes down to. And if they can't have that with each other, then they need to make an appointment with a good couples therapist.
Absolutely. Of course, that's true. And, you know, I think the part about they need to be able to talk with or without a therapist, what that calls for, just to kind of wrap this up in terms we've already talked about, what that calls for from Chloe is courage, really. She needs to be able to courageously say what's important to her without worrying a whole heck of a lot about whether he'll like it or not. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not saying, you know, to be a jerk about it. I'm saying courageously, you know, if he may or may not like it, but she needs to be clear. And of course, what it requires from her husband is the willingness to look at his own sense of entitlement and recognize it's just on a practical basis, it's not doing him much good in terms of having a wife who wants to have sex with him. And pretty clearly, that's what he wants is not merely to have sex. He wants to have his wife want to have sex with him. And so looking at his own sense of entitlement there is going to be pretty key.
Well, if you have questions that you would like us to discuss on the air, we would love to hear them. And you can email us at bruce@brucechalmer.com or visit brucechalmer.com.
And when you visit brucechalmer.com, if you go over to the podcast tab there, you will see, in addition to being able to listen to all the various episodes, you will see that we are asking for suggestions, and not only suggestions for topics, but also suggestions for guests to interview. And you can check out some of other interviews. We've done a bunch of them, and they've really been a lot of fun. And you can even suggest yourself. In fact, I even went so far as to put on the website a link you can use to go ahead and schedule a time for us to interview you. In the course of specifying that, you'll be asked, gee, what would you like to talk about? And that's, of course, how we will get a sense of whether you'd be a good fit for the program or not. And we'll get back to you either way. So, Judy, tell us, what are some of the next things we're going to be talking about in future episodes?
Okay, so some of our topics include family estrangement, more on how to deal with infidelity, and other topics, especially if you suggest them.
So, just reminding you that this podcast, Couples Therapy in 7 Words, is based on that formula, Be Kind, Don't Panic, and Have Faith, which is the basis in turn for the book of mine that came out not that long ago called Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. And I invite you to, of course, get a hold of the book. You can do that via my website, brucechalmer.com. You can find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or you can order it at any of your favorite bookstores. If you do that, I would welcome it, please, if you would review it, especially on Amazon. For those who are not happy with the Amazon folks, I have great sympathy for that view, but that's how folks find out about books these days. So if you would review it, whether or not you buy it through Amazon, if you would review it on Amazon, that would be a really helpful thing as well. So, until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.